Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a free ebook for you to download today that you won't want to miss. It's called In Conversation with Jordan Peterson, Atheism, Christianity, and the Psychology of Belief. This special ebook was created from an unbelievable podcast with famed Canadian psychologist Jordan Peterson. And in it, you'll discover how to bring order to a chaotic world using the wisdom of the Bible. So download your free copy of In Conversation with Jordan Peterson by visiting premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. This is a limited time offer, so make sure to do it today. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Good afternoon and welcome along to Unbelievable, the show that brings Christians and non-Christians together for dialogue and debate. Here as part of Faith Explored on Premier Christian Radio, I'm Justin Brierley, and it's my delight to say that last week we had Unbelievable, the conference 2017 in central London. I was joined by over 600 people who came along to hear a wonderful range of speakers, guests, topics and seminars across the course of the day. And well, time doesn't allow to express just how much the day meant to me and to meet all of those people who are regular listeners of the show. We'll be catching up a little bit with some of the feedback that came back to the conference at the end of today's show. But for the moment, thank you everyone who was able to attend. And if you weren't, don't worry. We are releasing a DVD and audio MP3 CD of the conference in due course. And next week's show will actually be devoted to looking at some of the material that was shared at the conference this year. And today's show is also a bit different because I'm going to be telling you about my new book. Yes, last week's conference was the launch, really, of Unbelievable, the book. Why, after 10 years of talking with atheists, I'm still a Christian. I gave, for the first time actually, a talk of my own at the conference, and that's what we'll be airing today on the programme. So no debate or discussion today on the show, but you will hear some of the Q&A that took place after that talk, which was led by Jeremiah J. Johnston, the Q&A session, who was also a brilliant speaker actually at the conference. So much good feedback to what he had to say. He is the president of Christian Thinkers Society, and along with Museum of the Bible were our partners for last week's conference. But towards the end of today's show, we'll hear some feedback on that, our first reactions to the book, some of the endorsements that have been going on, and of course reactions to recent editions of the programme.
You're unbelievable.
Last week's conference was the first opportunity for people to get their hands on pre-release copies of the book, but you can pre-order Unbelievable, the book, from anywhere in the world via the website we've set up for it. That's at unbelievablebook.co.uk. unbelievablebook.co.uk. Now, how come you still believe, Justin, is probably the most common question I've been asked over the 10 plus years of presenting this show, Unbelievable. And this book, very much my answer. It's distilled from hundreds of conversations with atheists and Christians, skeptics and believers. And it's my case for faith, having heard both the objections and evidences from the world's leading thinkers. It's all about why I believe Christianity still remains, for me, the best explanation of life, the universe, and everything. More information on the book available from the website unbelievablebook.co.uk. I've been blessed and humbled by the people who have endorsed the book, including Tim Keller, well known as a pastor of Redeemer Presbyterian Church in New York and a brilliant author in his own right. Believers and non-believers and the many in between will all be helped by this book, is just part of what Tim had to say about it. It has a foreword by Alistair McGrath. And, of course, there's more resources available from the website if you want to find out more about the book. In fact, if you're outside the UK, there's a link there to the Amazon listing. If you're ordering from the USA or elsewhere, you can also pre-order the Kindle version of the book via Amazon. But if you're able to order it directly from the Premier website, that's great as well. For those who aren't sure about it, we do have a free sample chapter download as well to whet your appetite, plus all that extra information about the book at the website. Again, unbelievablebook.co.uk. So today on the programme, I'm going to be airing the talk I gave at the Unbelievable Conference titled Not So Unbelievable, Why, After 10 Years of Talking with Atheists, I'm Still a Christian.
Standing here on the stage 11 and a half years ago when I began the show, I would never have imagined the fact that we would have a conference, that we would have 10 plus years of stories and journey to share together. And I never sort of really imagined a book either. I've recently adopted a new strapline for the show, that I often introduce the program with, conversations that matter. Conversations are really important, aren't they? When I started at Premier Christian Radio, my broadcasting career, I began on the breakfast show. In fact, I've got a slide here, and this will show you how much I've aged in the time. There you go. I look about 12, don't I, in that picture. I was the co-host with John Pantry, the man in the middle, and Maria for the breakfast show. And that really taught me the ropes of radio and how to get a conversation going. In many ways, one of the key things that I did was try to stimulate the conversation when it came to the daily phone-in. And I soon learned that one of the fastest ways to spark a listener reaction was to have some kind of a voice, a controversial voice, even if it was my own, playing devil's advocate on the radio that they would respond to. And soon enough, I was given the opportunity to create a radio show for myself from scratch, a weekly spot in the schedule that I could call my very own. Now, Premier Christian Radio was already very good at a specific kind of broadcasting. We were good at creating conversations between Christians. Christians talking about Christian things to other Christians, all important and helpful. But I wanted to widen the conversation a bit. The fact is, less than 5% of people in the UK attend church on a Sunday. So what about reaching that vast, untapped, non-Christian audience that was out there? What about reaching beyond our own bubble? So the format of this new show was fairly simple. I'd sit down with two guests each week, one a Christian and the other not, to talk to them about why one believed and the other didn't. And we'd take calls from listeners and see what they had to say, and we'd title the show Unbelievable with a question mark. And in 11 and a half years now, not that much has actually changed, except that we ended up not taking listener calls in the end, and we leave the feedback to the end of the show. But the question mark on the end of Unbelievable was essential. Each show would debate some kind of a question with the intention of testing the central claims of Christianity. Could they stand up to scrutiny? What were the alternative views? And along the way, what could we learn from each other, other people outside the Christian faith who could join in the big conversation? So it was on Saturday afternoon in late November 2005 that the very first episode of Unbelievable aired. Now, the picture you're about to see is not from that episode. That was not one that I had a camera handy for. But this is a typical sort of setup in the studio, two guests joining me to talk about the show across the desk. And the very first guests I actually had, and one of them's actually here at the conference, I'm glad to say, were a priest called John Twistleton, Father John Twistleton, and his non-believing neighbour, Clive. Not superstars of the Christian and atheist world, but nonetheless, two people who joined me to have a frank conversation about their belief or disbelief. And that's where it all began, and really, the conversation has continued ever since, and it would lead to many years of learning from each other, and the calls did come flooding in. Now, I became a Christian around the age of 15. Everyone has a different story, but mine was a powerful experience of God at a youth retreat. And I'll be forever grateful for the youth pastor and the people who mentored me in my early faith. And when I experienced the presence of Jesus in my life, I immediately wanted to go out and tell other people about him. But as we all know, it's not always that simple. A lot of the reaction I got from my school friends, I was doing A-levels at the time, was, well, that's great for you, Justin, but... And the fact was, I had had a very personal, very powerful experience, but it was hard for me to convey that to others who simply didn't know about that experience. Now, for some people, simply telling them your testimony, how God's changed your life, is enough to spark enough curiosity to make them investigate the claims of Christianity for themselves. But often people need something else. They need people who are very skeptical are perhaps looking for reasons that are available to both of us, objective reasons rather than our personal subjective reasons to consider the claims of Christianity, something we've both got access to. And that's when we come to the technical word, apologetics. Now, if you'd said apologetics to me when I began Unbelievable, I would probably have thought you were apologizing for something, saying sorry. I really wasn't familiar with the term when I began the show, but I soon did get familiar with the term because essentially apologetics, the defense of the faith, is what the show has been about for many years. It's what Paul was doing in Athens when he spoke at the Areopagus to the Greek philosophers and put the claims of Christ to them. And it's what we're advised to do in 1 Peter 3:15. Bring that up on the screen. Well-known verse, and really it's become the central verse of the show. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect. And that's what we aimed to do on the show, give a reason for the hope that we had, but to do it with civility, with gentleness, with respect. And as the show progressed, listeners would never quite know what to expect from week to week. Shows featuring academic types could be relied upon to be, you know, well-argued, polite, relatively safe. But there were also some really zinging debaters, opinionated people, and you could expect a really interesting feedback from the audience when they came on. I remember feeling very sorry for a young biologist who was verbally dismantled by the journalist Peter Hitchens on one edition of the programme. Or there's someone who some of you may have heard before, he's a regular contributor on the programme, the Reverend David Robertson, who would always come in, larger-than-life character, an amazing debater, and would always create a big listener reaction and often an reaction from the non-Christian guests opposite him. I remember one leaving the studio and muttering darkly under his breath, "Where did you get him from?" Some shows were very unpredictable as well. One that sticks in my memory is when I had a very vociferous critic of Islam who was on the line, on the telephone line, and a Muslim apologist in studio. And I literally had to stop the recording and tell them to stop insulting each other because it got really aggressive in there. And I wasn't even sure if I could broadcast the show that we were recording. But in any case, there have been some memorable moments, not least when I've had Christians debating as well. In fact, the show kind of came to be much more well-known in the USA when I had a couple of well-known megachurch pastors on the show in past years. One of the most famous was Rob Bell. I've got a picture of the man here. And we did a couple of debates when he was over in the UK, one on universalism on the back of a book he'd written called Love Wins, and also a debate on same-sex relationships. Both of the videos for those went viral and brought the show to a much wider audience. And then there was the Mark Driscoll show, anyone who's familiar with him will know he has been a somewhat of a controversial figure in the US. He was a megachurch pastor until his church closed down. And when he came on the show, he actually caused some controversy by criticising the quality of British preachers. And when that was reported in the media, it led to him publicly attacking me on his blog and saying I'd, you know, been a terrible interviewer and so on. What I did in the end was I released the full recording so people could make their own minds up. And it included the unforgettable experience of him sort of turning the tables on me and becoming the inquisitor at the end and grilling me on my theology. But it was a storm in a teacup, really. But it went on to become the most downloaded show ever, and that's the way these things often are, isn't it? But those are some of these sort of, you know, some of those funny stories that emerge in the course of doing this. But for the most part, the core of the show has always been atheists and Christians getting together to dialogue. And perhaps the reason why we've focused the conversation on atheism and Christianity is because the show came about at a time when the new atheists were really emerging as a force to be reckoned with. There was, in 2006, less than a year after the show began, Richard Dawkins' best-selling book, The God Delusion, was published. I'm sure you're familiar with him. And his name would crop up regularly on the show in the 10 years after that. Eventually, I was able to have the man himself on, which was very exciting, and I'll talk a little bit about that later on. But certainly, that's where the conversation has often been, in the culture, and therefore, that's where the conversation has been on the show. Now, I'd like to tell you that Unbelievable had a very warm and enthusiastic reception by all the Premier Christian Radio listeners, but it didn't, actually. Some people weren't very happy about having atheists on their Christian radio. They've got plenty of airtime on the BBC, they said. Why do we need them on radio? And I could understand that, because at the end of the day, you wouldn't normally expect to switch on your radio on a Saturday at 2:30 and hear some cherished doctrine being severely critiqued by an atheist. Now, to his credit, Peter Kerridge, the station's CEO, decided that the merits of the show outweighed any potential discomfort for some of the audience. And of course, there were many others who said they really enjoyed having a show that got us outside of that bubble, started talking to other people. And I think those who enjoyed the show would stick with it, and those who didn't enjoy it would simply skip that 90-minute section on a Saturday. And I knew that it wouldn't be everyone's cup of tea. You know, it does take people outside the Christian bubble. But the fact is, bubbles are made for popping. And we live in an age now where there is widespread and rampant skepticism online. If you type in, "Did Jesus exist?" online, the top 10 results are likely to be very skeptical websites claiming that he never existed. Now, this is not a view that is shared in academia whatsoever. Nonetheless, the advent of the internet and the way people can get their message out that way has led to a lot of information, but also misinformation. And so I think it's important that we prepare people for the fact that they are going to interact with skeptical people, with skeptical ideas online. And at least on the show, we knew that we'd be able to do that with someone who could talk back, someone who could respond as well to the critiques. And perhaps the most amazing thing, it turned out, was that it wasn't just Christians who ended up listening, because once the show went up online as a podcast a couple of years into the show, suddenly atheists started tuning in, started getting in touch, especially if we had a well-known atheist speaker on, and perhaps they would then put the link to the show on their blog. Suddenly, we'd see a surge in downloads, we'd see more people joining the regular podcasting audience and getting on board. And I can say probably that half of my correspondence comes from non-believers to the show, people who are responding to the program, getting in touch. And if, by the way, if you're here at the conference as a non-Christian, can I just say you are so welcome? Because that's what we're here for. We're here to have the conversation together. Obviously, today is primarily aimed at equipping Christians, but I'm so glad if you have chosen to be here and you're not a Christian, great to have you here. Thank you for coming. Now, in the meantime, hosting the weekly program has provided me really with a 10-year course in apologetics and theology. And to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the show, I invited listeners to send me in their questions. And one of the most common was, how has the show made you change your mind on anything? And probably the other most common one was, after listening to so many skeptics with all their objections, how come you're still a Christian? Now, that's a fair question. And from any atheist who thinks that every argument they hear against Christianity is a slam dunk, my persisting Christian faith, I'm sure, will often look like a willful denial of the obvious. But in my experience, two people can be listening to the same conversation and come away with very different impressions of what happened, very different conclusions, me included. And 10 years on, I can say that I'm more confident in my Christian faith than I was when I began. That's not to say my faith has remained unaffected. There's definitely been issues where I've had to think through, what do I believe about that subject and this subject? And yes, there's been a few periods of unsettling doubt when I heard a really cogent critique of Christianity for the first time, and I've battled to maybe resolve a question, and maybe there's been a sleepless night. But and not all the mysteries have been resolved yet. I mean, there's plenty of things I'm happy to say I don't know, or I'll look into it, or simply, you know, to be decided maybe when I get to heaven. But that should be true of all of us. We're not here to claim that we have every answer. But I think we have enough to be very confident as well in the core claims of Christianity. And that doesn't mean doubt will never assail us. You know, faith, I think, in the absence of doubt is something like certainty. And I don't think we're ever granted certainty except in fields like mathematics and things like that. And faith is about trusting God in the things we do know for the things that we don't know. It's about trusting the God we do know for the things that we don't know. So when people ask me, why are you still a Christian, there's a few things that I often talk to them about. When I was making plans for this conference, I discovered it was 90 years ago this year that Bertrand Russell, who'll come up on screen in a moment, he was probably the most famous atheist intellectual of the early 20th century, and it was 90 years ago this year that he wrote his famous booklet, Why I Am Not a Christian. And he gave reasons there against God, against Christian morality, and against Jesus. And in some ways, I didn't write it in this way, but my book could be seen as an answer to those issues, trying to show that part of the reason I'm a Christian is because I think Christianity really does make sense, that Jesus Christ is the answer to life the universe and everything. Because I do believe Jesus is the key to it all. We won't have time to cover Jesus today. I do recommend you visit Andy Bannister's session near the end of the day when he'll be talking about Jesus for Atheists. But with the remaining time, I'm going to quickly run through a few of the reasons I give in the first half of the book for why a creator God makes sense of life, the universe, and everything. I often term it like this. I talk about three reasons why I believe God is the best explanation. Why do I use that terminology? Well, sort of as John alluded to in the opening talk, we all have beliefs. We all have explanations for the things we find around us. And often people think that, well, Christians are the ones who are making the claims about God and the supernatural. They have to provide the evidence. And an atheist may think, I can just sit back and wait for them to make the case. But I think that's a misunderstanding. The atheist also has a set of beliefs. And very often, that is something akin to what's often called naturalism. The idea that there is no God, there's no supernatural things. All that really exists in the world is matter and molecules in motion, obeying the blind forces of nature, essentially. So that's one way of understanding life in the universe. Now, another way of understanding it is Christianity. And in this view, Christians, humans are not an accidental byproduct of the universe, as they would have to be in the atheist view, worldview. We're meant to be here. There is a God behind the whole show. And as John said, that God became personally involved with us in the person of Jesus Christ. And the question is, which version of reality is true? Which offers the best explanation of life, the universe, and everything? And so that's why I start off with the first reason. I believe God is the best explanation of human existence. God makes sense of human existence. Now, on Facebook, you can add your religious status to your profile. And I've got an atheist friend, and when I read it made me chuckle because he said, I have trouble even believing that I exist, was what he put on his status. And it's funny because actually, he's got a point, actually. Human existence, you and I, are incredibly unlikely when you think about it. There's a familiar mantra and a bit of a popular myth that we don't need God now that we've got science to explain everything. But if anything, I'd say the direction of travel in the last 60 or 70 years has been in the opposite direction, that science increasingly is pointing towards evidence for God. Let's start with something you might be familiar with. You may well have heard it on the show, in other arenas, the fine-tuning of the universe. This was a revelation to me when I began looking into the evidence for Christianity and started to bring on some of the world's experts in this area. Many of you will be familiar with this, but for those who aren't, physicists agree that when the universe came into existence, the fundamental laws and physical constants it was birthed with and which govern it were fine-tuned to an astonishingly accurate degree to allow for life to develop in the course of the cosmos. Take, for example, the force of gravity. We know what gravity is. It's the force that sticks us to the ground. Now, it's sort of like the superglue of the universe, if you like. It holds together planets and solar systems and galaxies. In fact, the force is incredibly weak. One single atom exerts a very, very tiny amount of gravitational force. But it has a very, very specific value. And if it were just ever so slightly weaker, it would not be strong enough to hold together anything. And what you would end up with is a vastly sort of uniform matter spread out evenly through the universe and really nothing for life to begin on. There would be no galaxies, planets, chemistry to get life going. And if it was just a tiny fraction stronger, it would be too strong and everything would collapse back in on itself. But what are we talking then with the wiggle room, this kind of this particular force of gravity and how finely tuned it is? Well, science tells us that if it differed from its actual value by one part in 10 to the 60, then the universe as we know it would be unable to exist. Now, for those who are unfamiliar with scientific notation, 10 to the 60 is a 1 with 60 zeros after it. Or written out in words, it would be 1 trillion, 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 trillion. And what that tells us is that this had to take this particular value, this incredibly specific value, in order for us to be able to be here. And when you add to that the fact that there are about 30 or so other extremely finely tuned, much more finely tuned values and initial constants, it raises this incredible question. Why was it set up that way? What's going on? It seems to pose a massive question mark over why we're here. It looks like the universe saw us coming in some way. In fact, agnostic physicist Fred Hoyle is famous for remarking, a common sense interpretation of the facts suggests that a super intellect has monkeyed with physics as well as chemistry and biology, and that there are no blind forces worth speaking about in nature. Now, Fred Hoyle was an atheist, and as far as I know, he remained an atheist in his life, but he could see that this was a most remarkable feature of our universe. So what best explains this fine-tuning? And, of course, we've done many shows debating this. There are lots of other possible answers out there. Maybe, you know, life could have developed in some alternative setup, but maybe there's a multiverse, you know, many chances for different values to emerge. We could go into those, but we don't have time. For me, having heard all the arguments for and against in my time on the show, I still believe the arrow of evidence firmly points in the direction of a designer. Because it's not just the fine-tuning. Think about the extraordinary complexity and nature of DNA and what it took to get that going for life to develop on the Earth. The very universe in which life arose, result of this thing we call the Big Bang 14 billion years ago, as John said, very much, a lot of people argue, points to a beginning, the coming into existence of space, matter, energy, time itself. And it's natural to ask, well, what set that off? When it comes to that, there only seems to be one candidate, as far as I can see, for the job. Because if something that's coming into existence is spatial and it has matter, energy, and time, the cause has to transcend that. It has to be immaterial, timeless, enormously powerful. And there's really no other candidate for that job except God. Now, of course, this stuff gets debated and is highly debated in the literature, on the blogs, on the show. If you're asking me, though, where does the direction of evidence point? When you look at the big picture, I'm still convinced that it points towards God, not away from God. Towards a universe which wasn't just coming from nowhere, going nowhere, and we're just the accidental byproduct. A universe in which we were intended as the outcome of something by something beyond the universe.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
You're listening to Unbelievable, airing the talk that I gave at last week's Unbelievable, the Conference 2017, titled Not So Unbelievable, Why After 10 Years of Talking with Atheists, I'm Still a Christian. This was on the occasion of the launch of the book Unbelievable at the conference last week. And if you'd like to pre-order a copy of the book, find out more information about it, do go to the website unbelievablebook.co.uk. We'll be back with more from my talk and the Q&A that followed it in just a moment's time.
Premier and SPCK invite you to London Bible Week. Your opportunity to hear renowned speakers Tom Wright, Krish Kandaya, Elaine Storkey, Rowan Williams, Celia Appiedi Collins and Calvin Samuel, with worship led by Lou Fellingham. Meet Jesus in God's Word and hear what God is really saying to us. London Bible Week, from the 17th to the 22nd of July at Emmanuel Centre, Westminster. Revealing truth, meeting Jesus in God's Word.
For tickets and information, visit londonbibleweek.com.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to the second part of today's Unbelievable show with me, Justin Brierley, presenter of the Faith Debate Show that brings Christians and non-Christians together for dialogue and debate. Dispensing, though, with the usual format of the show just for today, because I wanted to use today's programme to bring you a talk that I gave at last week's Unbelievable Conference 2017 to mark the launch of Unbelievable, the book, Why After 10 Years of Talking with Atheists, I'm Still a Christian. We're going to be continuing to hear my talk at the conference and the Q&A that followed it, led by Jeremiah J. Johnston. Just a reminder that you can find out more and pre-order a copy of the book at our website, unbelievablebook.co.uk. There's also links for ordering it if you're outside the UK, where you can get the Kindle version on Amazon and so on, and indeed a free sample chapter download if you want to just whet your appetite there. unbelievablebook.co.uk. Do share that about as well on social media if you can. We want to get the word out. It's one of those authory things that you have to do to reach out to people to provide endorsements for your book before it's published and send the advance copy of it and so on to people. And we've got a number of those in the book. It's really humbling, actually, for the people who are willing to put their name and their recommendation to this particular book. One of them was actually Mike Rand, who's an unbelievable listener. I'm sure he's listening to today's programme, and who came on about a year ago as an agnostic on the programme, and had a great discussion with David Robertson at the time. Well, I thought Mike might be a fun person to get to look at the book and provide an endorsement. He wrote, "Writing with the same clarity he brings to radio discussions, Justin has a way of cutting to the nub of issues that make difficult concepts understandable, even for agnostics like me." And in fact, I mention this because Mike is going to be joining me on a future edition of Unbelievable to quiz me about the book, about my case for Christianity, and about the show. So look forward to that in the future. Right now, it's time to continue with the talk I gave at last week's Unbelievable conference, Not So Unbelievable: Why, After 10 Years of Talking with Atheists, I'm Still a Christian.
Here's a second reason why I think God makes sense of our existence and our experience. God makes sense of human value. I want to tell you a story. I got this story from a guest on the show a few years ago. In 1973, a wealthy businessman, Jaime Jaramillo, was walking along the streets of Bogota in Colombia when he saw a young girl climb through a manhole into the sewers below. Well, Jaime went home, put on a wetsuit, and followed that girl into the sewers. And to his amazement, he discovered about 90 street children living in these filthy, rat-infested sewers. And the reason they were there was that off-duty policemen on the streets above were killing the children who lived on the streets. One officer said, "Killing these kids is like killing lice. We call them the disposables." Now, since then, Jaime has rescued hundreds of children and young people and used his money to build a special home in Colombia where they receive an education and live in a loving Christian community. But I'm sure you find that story, like me, both disturbing and inspiring. You react with horror at the idea that any human being, children, could be treated in such a way as disposables. But we also have to ask ourselves, why? Why do we believe that human life should be valued, should be cherished? Why did Jaime do the right thing, the human thing? And the fact is, again, on atheism, I can't see an answer to that question. Because on atheism, there is no ultimate value to human life. Humans have no more special claim on the biological tree of life than a louse. You know, if one culture happens to develop a disregard for human life, that's just the way the world is. There's nothing intrinsically special about us. One of the stories I tell in the book is when I got my very first interview with Richard Dawkins, well-known atheist, professor of biology, and John Lennox might remember this because it actually happened in the reception party after a debate he'd had with Richard Dawkins at Oxford University several years ago. They'd concluded a magnificent debate, and I'd managed afterwards to bag an interview in the hubbub of this room with Dawkins himself. And we got talking about human morality and whether you could ground our belief in human dignity and value and morality without God. And he ended up making what I thought was quite a surprising admission. Here's how our conversation went. I started off, "But if we'd evolved into a society where rape was considered fine, would that mean that rape is fine?" And Dawkins replied, "Well, I don't want to answer that question. It's enough for me to say that we live in a society where it's not considered fine. We live in a society where selfishness, failure to pay your debts, failure to reciprocate favors is regarded askance. That is the society in which we live. I'm very glad that's a value judgment, glad that I live in such a society." I won't do the accent. And then I responded, "Well, but when you make a value judgment, don't you yourself immediately step yourself outside of this evolutionary process and say, well, the reason this is good is that it's good, and you don't have any way to stand on that statement? And he responded, "What, my value judgment itself could come from my evolutionary past." And I said, "Well, so therefore it's just as random in a sense as any product of evolution." And he said, "You could say that. In any case, nothing about it makes it more probable that there's anything supernatural." And I said, "Okay, but ultimately your belief that rape is wrong is as arbitrary as the fact that I've evolved 5 fingers rather than 6. And he said, "You could say that, yeah." Well, you could say that. And actually, you should say that, I think, if you're an atheist. I think Dawkins was being perfectly consistent with his worldview. But most of us, and atheists included, instinctively recoil at the idea that our moral belief that rape is wrong is just the happenstance of the hand we've been dealt by evolution. Why do we feel that rape really is wrong? Why is a human life special in and of itself, worth more than any other living creature on the biological tree? And I believe that that belief that so many of us share in the reality of human value and human morality is because we've got imprinted on us the design of our maker from day one. It's right there in Genesis. It describes humanity as made in the image of God. And the fact is, anything else makes human worth a commodity. It makes some people disposable. You know, one of those children in Bogota that was found gunned down had a note pinned to them. And the killer had said, "I killed you because you had no education and no future." And the question is that the measure of a human life? Is it dependent on who we are, where we were born? Is it dependent on our circumstances, our education? Or is it dependent on a transcendent God who says, "You are valued and made in my image"? Because it's only the God who says that we're made in his image that makes sense of this idea of human value to begin with. It just can't come from anywhere else. Third reason why I believe God is the best explanation: God makes sense of human purpose. I wonder if anyone has heard the story of Jennifer Fulweiler. I'll bring her up on screen. I tell her story in the book. Jennifer grew up in a loving family, but one in which religion was painted clearly as false. Jennifer says she never remembers a time when she believed in God. She was raised on a diet of science, reason, and evidence-based rational thought. In fact, her bedtime reading was Carl Sagan's astronomy book, Cosmos. And from a young age, she knew that the world ran according to these well-established set of natural laws. And science was just the de facto way of understanding everything. All the evidence confirmed we live in this material world of matter, molecules, electrons, and protons with no need for God. Jennifer lived in the atheist, naturalist worldview. However, shortly after the birth of her first child, she experienced a dramatic shift in her thinking. And Jennifer describes it herself this way: "I looked down and thought, what is this baby? And I thought, well, from a pure atheist materialist perspective, he is a randomly evolved collection of chemical reactions. And I realized, if that's true, then all the love that I feel for him is nothing more than chemical reactions in my brain. And I looked down at him and I thought, that's not true. That's not the truth." It was a turning point for Jennifer and set her off on a journey which would ultimately lead her to Jesus. And Jennifer realized, you see there, I think, that the story that atheism tells is one in which it's very difficult to find ultimate purpose. Again, Dawkins does this wonderfully for us in neatly summarizing the atheist perspective on this. He's written, "The universe we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is at bottom no design, no purpose, no evil, no good, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference." And he's absolutely right. Once again, if there is no God, that is perfectly consistent with his worldview. If atheism is true, then we are, as Jennifer put it, a randomly evolved collection of chemical reactions. If atheism is true, then all human endeavor, all our self-made human purposes will ultimately be gone and forgotten in the eventual death of the universe in trillions of years' time, when all that's left is a cold, sterile void, because that's where we're actually heading if this is just a material universe we're living in. But I see life and the universe very differently to Dawkins. Where Richard Dawkins sees only physical processes and laws, I see a lot more than that. I see beauty, I see truth, I see love, I see real good and real evil, purpose to life, hope. These are the things we experience in life. And I believe all of our human experience ultimately ends in a yearning for something beyond our physical existence. It's a yearning for something transcendent, for ultimate purpose, for ultimate value, for ultimate meaning. C.S. Lewis put it like this. He said, a baby feels hunger. Well, there is such a thing as food. A duckling wants to swim. Well, there is such a thing as water. People feel sexual desire. Well, there is such a thing as sex. If we can have the last segment of this quote on the screen. He said, he concluded this by saying, if I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world. And we're looking for the most probable explanation here. Sometimes this is called the argument from desire. Could this desire that so many people across all cultures and across all time feel, this desire for the transcendent, to see something beyond themselves, could that have a real object which satisfies it? Because we all long for purpose. You have set eternity in our hearts, says the writer of Ecclesiastes. The great mathematician and scientist Blaise Pascal put it this way. There's a God-shaped hole in the heart of every person, and it can never be filled by any created thing. It can only be filled by God, made known through Jesus Christ. You see, I think in the end, ultimately, atheism and Christianity tell two very different stories. One is ultimately of purposelessness, and the other is of ultimate hope. Hope that there is a reason for our existence, hope that our lives mean something, hope that death is not actually the end. And I believe that only Christianity answers the deepest longings of our soul. Jesus' death is the ultimate expression of the value that God invests in us, his love for us, forgiving us, making us right with him, going to the cross himself for us. And Jesus' resurrection is the ultimate expression of hope for the future. The case for that resurrection is a whole other story. It's a whole other chapter in the book as well. But what it gives us is an answer to the longing. Hope that goes beyond the grave. Hope that our lives, this world, will one day be put right again. It'll be renewed one day. So in 11 plus years of doing Unbelievable, I've met many atheists. They're almost invariably intelligent, honest, good people. And I think the worst kind of apologetics we can do is the kind where we sort of do character assassination. Let's not do that. And when I'm critiquing the atheist worldview, I'm not dismissing atheists' own honest search for the truth. But the fact is, we do see things very differently. I find it very hard to believe that the rational and ordered universe we live in came from nowhere and is heading nowhere. I find it impossible to conceive that our intrinsic beliefs about human value are merely an illusion. Nor can I convince myself that our search for purpose and meaning are ultimately in vain. To me, it makes far more sense to read God's fingerprints and purposes both out there in the universe we see and in here, in our personal experiences. I've really enjoyed becoming immersed in this world, the defense of the faith, but there's always this danger, isn't there? Of apologetics becoming an end in itself. And really, apologetics isn't the point. You see, if our evidences are worth anything at all, they're not simply about pointing people towards a good intellectual argument. They're about pointing people towards a life-fulfilling person, Jesus Christ. And our job isn't simply to make the case for our Christian worldview. It's actually to invite people into our Christian worldview. I remember at the second Unbelievable conference that we had, the evangelist Michael Green gave the opening address, and he told a story that's always stayed with me of a woman who found Christianity quite compelling in some ways, but remained uncertain about committing herself as there were various questions and issues she still felt like she had to resolve before she could become a Christian. Well, a friend of hers who was a Christian took her to an old church and showed her the building. And from the outside, it looked very austere and foreboding, with these tall windows which were dark and opaque. But then she took her up to the door, and they stepped inside. And suddenly, she went inside the sanctuary, and the light was streaming in through those windows, bathing the whole sanctuary in this beautiful colours. The stained glass windows were casting this wonderful colour inside the church. And stepping into the church was a very different experience to living outside of the church. And I think that's a great analogy for Christian faith, because for a lot of people, investigating the faith, prodding from the outside, really matters. It's an important part of the journey. But Christian faith is meant to be lived out. It's meant to be experienced. It's meant to be stepped into to be properly understood. And so that's also our call as apologists, as evangelists, just as Christians, really. It's to live out this faith and to show what Christianity looks like in practice. And when we get asked, to give a reason for the hope that we have. Thank you very much for listening and being part of this big, unbelievable conversation. Thank you very much.
You to prepare your question. I know there are many people with questions. We have just about 10 or 12 minutes, and we have individuals in yellow that are walking around with a microphone, so prepare your question, but I want to ask just a few things right at the outset of this Q&A time. Justin, I was delighted to endorse this book, but I think the most powerful part, having already read it, was a experience that you and your wife Lucy had in your gap year in Africa. I think that a frustration I have as a university professor, I'm a university professor at America's sixth most diverse university. Many of you may not know Houston is the most diverse city in the United States right now. 180 languages are spoken in our city alone. It's an international city. And what I have found is you can share all the cerebral aspects of Christianity, but Christianity doesn't stop there. It actually begins with an experience with Almighty God. And I want you to talk for a moment, because I think that was really the crowning moment when I read this book, and I think it makes this book distinctive.
Well, that's very
talk
kind.
Talk about that moment
well,
with you and Lucy.
It's kind of what I was talking about at the end of the talk there, which is the idea that Christianity has to be lived to be properly understood. And I do tell the story of my wife Lucy and I, just after we got married, we took an 8-month gap year in Namibia, in southern Africa. And what that meant was living and working with the Namibian people on a Anglican church mission in the north of the country. And what that gave me, before I ever got into apologetics, theology, and the rest of it, was the lived experience of other Christians in a very different part of the world and their experience of Christianity. And what I realized is Christianity is extraordinary in the way it appeals to every time, place, and culture. It's got this extraordinary elasticity in the message, the core message, which means that, I put it this way, when Christianity becomes part of a culture, it doesn't crush the culture, but it ennobles the culture. And these people hadn't stopped being Namibian. They hadn't stopped being the part of the tribe they were in that area. But they had become part of a much wider tribe, the Christian church. And it was just extraordinary to be able to share times of fellowship, prayer, church, which was very different in Namibia. It would go on for like 6 hours there. But also to feel like this faith has been making a difference everywhere you go. Because the fact is, Christian missionaries, before and after in Namibia, it made a huge difference to education, women's rights, all kinds of areas. And one of the fascinating stories, I mention it in the book, is that Matthew Paris, who's a well-known atheist journalist here in the UK, he wrote an article several years ago where he said, "As an atheist, I truly believe Africa needs God." And he recognized the extraordinary way in which Christianity transforms cultures. And as an atheist, he couldn't deny that, as someone who had lived in Malawi in his childhood. So that, for me, is one of the most powerful evidences in the end for Christianity. It works, basically.
Yeah. Beautiful. Now, tell us where we can connect with you, because we also have people watching online on social media.
Well, the website is premier.org.uk/unbelievable. We're going to be opening up the website for the book in the coming week. That will be at unbelievablebook.co.uk. You won't find it there if you go just now, but that will be set up in the coming week.
And your Twitter?
At UnbelievableJB.
UnbelievableJB. There's another Justin Brierley, apparently, in the UK I've been tweeting.
And yeah.
UnbelievableJB.
He often gets in touch with me and says, "I've got another text for you."
Okay. Yeah. In just the minutes that remain, what questions do you have for either Justin, his journey, Unbelievable the program, Unbelievable the conference? Just slip your hand up and we'll get to you with a question. And we have one right here.
Hi. Okay. First of all, thank you for this really interesting talk. And I have a very simple question. You said that one of your first two debaters was here, and I was wondering whether it was the priest or Clive.
Good question. It's the priest, Father John Twistleton. In fact, is John in the audience? No, he may be at a different seminar. But anyway, yes, he's around. I don't know if he's got his dog collar on today. Thank you.
Who else has a question for Justin? We have several right up here in the front area.
Thank you. We are asked to be ready to give a reason for the hope that's in us. But I find that the real problem in everyday life is how to get into a conversation where anyone might ask you that question. Now, you, at the very beginning, talked about sparking a conversation by playing devil's advocate. I wonder if you could just shed a little bit of light on how we might do that.
Well, that was in relation to what I used to do on the breakfast show, and that was to get Christian callers calling in, and that would be by maybe saying something a little bit controversial that would make them want to push back. I mean, when it comes to our everyday interactions with non-Christians, I think it's important that we try to be natural. And that was a great talk, actually, for anyone who was here at last year's conference, Jay John, talking about natural evangelism. And not to force issues on people, and you know, because otherwise we kind of become like parrots or robots. But whenever possible, if there's an opportunity to mention the fact I'm a Christian, it's kind of easy for me because of the job I do. So often when the conversation turns to what you do, I tell them. But in whatever way we find easiest to mention, oh yeah, I go to church, I do this, I do that. I think the key is actually not being afraid of asking questions yourself. Because if someone says something and you think, and they've maybe said something critical of religion or what a lot of rubbish or whatever, the instinctive reaction for a lot of Christians is to clam up and to think, oh, that's awkward. I better not say anything now. For me, what the show has managed to do is help to just enhance confidence so that we can say, that's a really interesting view. Why do you think that? And that can be, the pathway into a great conversation. It's also about prayer. Let's not forget that all of this is predicated on a relationship with God, foundational in prayer, and that we do it out of that basis. And you'll be amazed at the coincidences that happen when you do start praying.
Excellent. In the balcony, we had a question as well for you, Justin.
Hi, Justin. Just want to ask you, in the 10 years that you have been doing Unbelievable, have you had any converts to Christianity?
It's a really good question. And something that I cover a bit in the book is that Unbelievable is the kind of show which isn't like a pat apologetics show where you just get the Christian side. You've obviously got the atheist side. And what that means is you're opening up the debate in both directions. And so what I tend to have found is that there are lots of Christians who get in touch to say, the show's really helped me in my faith. I get non-Christians who say, this show has changed my mind to the extent that I'm no longer a hard-boiled atheist, I'm a curious agnostic, say. And just sometimes you get people who say, this show has been part of my journey to becoming a Christian. And that has happened on numerous occasions. I think Peter Byram, there he is. He's one person who would have that story. Obviously part of a much bigger story. Unbelievable wasn't the only factor, but it was a part of the journey. And I equally get agnostics and atheists who say, hasn't convinced me, I was more convinced by the atheist guest. I get agnostics and atheists who say, this just confirmed me in my movement away from Christianity. Now, for me, I have to say, those are just the choices people make. Everyone has a different reaction. And I've got to leave it up to God. All I can do is try and create the right space for having honest conversations. I've got to kind of leave the rest to God in the end and people's own personal freedom to choose which direction they're going in. So, yes, there have been a few people, certainly over the years, but it's always part of a much bigger story as well.
We have just 4 minutes left. We had another question right up here, and I'm going to help save a few steps for our friend here.
Andrew Lloyd Webber, Tim Rice wrote Jesus Christ Superstar. Does something like Jesus Christ Superstar or Jesus Christ Superstar help the debate about who Jesus really is? Does it make him more believable or unbelievable?
Now, I should just mention who's asking this question. That's our friend from All Souls, Noel Tredinnick. If anyone's ever been to Prom Praise or seen the All Souls Orchestra in action, he's the man behind it. It's wonderful to have you here, Noel. Those big occasions, the musicals, the plays, the whatever it may be. Yes, I think anything that helps to spark consciousness of Jesus, even if it's something we wouldn't necessarily put our signature to ourselves. You know, when the Monty Python film came out about Jesus, you know, this was before my time, admittedly, but it sparked a lot of controversy, and there were lots of Christians, you know, saying we shouldn't have this kind of thing, down with this sort of thing. Now, actually, I think in a funny way, if you actually watch the Monty Python film, as much as it's a parody of the life of Jesus, it doesn't actually, there's a kind of little bit at the beginning where you realize that actually there is a Jesus, but this other group went after the wrong character. And in fact, it's quite accurate about the way there were messianic pretenders at that time in Israel. And I've often used it actually as an analogy for getting people to think about the true Messiah, the one that, you know, it's being a parody about. So yes, anything like that I think is helpful. And that's part of, I think, the mission where apologetics is very often lacking is in the imaginative, creative side. I do these very cerebral debates on the radio. They're great. Lots of people enjoy those. But there's a whole other section of people for whom they're not going to engage in the same way. They need something creative. They need, you know, and we know C.S. Lewis was the master of doing imaginative apologetics. And we need much more of that in society.
We have one final question. And if you can just make it about 30 seconds, that'd be great.
In terms of your temperament and how you keep your cool on the radio stations, because some of the questions they may ask you must surely hit you in your gut. So I'm just saying, from a pragmatic perspective, how do you keep your cool? Because I think that's probably one of your best qualities I see you have in the show, that you're probably one of the most fairest hosts I've ever seen.
That's very kind. Thank you. I'd say it's really just in, you know, 10 plus years doing the show, you grow a kind of a thick skin. In the course of doing the show, I guess I've heard most of the arguments out there in different forms. And so every time an objection gets raised, I kind of mentally categorize it into, okay, that falls into this box. That's basically a version of the problem of evil or suffering. That's basically predicated on a view of scripture that you don't really have to hold in order to be a strong Christian. You know, there's different things. And I think once you have educated yourself, and that is something that requires time and energy and dedication, you'll learn, actually, that you don't need to be afraid. And I think our reaction to objections and things is often coming from a place of fear. And I think apologetics done well, and part of that is immersing yourself in these kinds of discussions, it builds our confidence. And confidence means that you don't have to fear things. And ultimately, of course, the Bible says that the opposite of fear is love. And that's where the spiritual dimension of it comes in. The more that we love the people who are asking the questions and don't view them as the enemy, as that person, the more we won't have that instinctive reaction to feel afraid, to feel offended. Far too much of what does happen in reality, online especially, in these chat rooms between Christians and atheists, is a lot of hand grenades get lobbed. It quickly turns into an all-out war. I hope that in some way the show, and hopefully my presence on it as well, helps to show how we can have these conversations, not be afraid, but do it with gentleness and love, and show that there is an answer out there.
And what a great note to end on. And don't you think he does that so well, representing our faith? Thank you, Justin.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Unbelievable here on Premier Christian Radio. Don't forget, you can go online and find out more about the show at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable, where we've links to our social media and more. But if you want one website address to remember from today's show, it's the one for the book, unbelievablebook.co.uk. Really pleased that we're able to have this for pre-order now there. Wherever you are in the world, you can order a copy either via our website or via the Amazon links at the website. And I'll be back shortly to bring you some feedback from the last few weeks of programming and to give you a little bit of reaction from those who attended last week's Unbelievable conference. Here I am to worship, bless the Lord, oh my soul. These are the songs that have shaped the 21st century church. In the May edition of Premier Christianity magazine, we chart the history of the UK's modern worship movement and its global impact. Plus, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, writes for us on praying for God's kingdom to come. And with a snap general election on the cards, we ask just how involved should Christians be in politics. All that plus much more. Ask for your free sample copy of the latest magazine, premierchristianity.com/freesample.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to the programme Unbelievable with me, Justin Brierley, part of Faith Explored this Saturday afternoon on Premier Christian Radio. Normally bringing you dialogues between Christians and non-Christians, conversations that matter, all that kind of stuff. But we've dispensed with the normal format of the show to air a talk I gave at last week's Unbelievable conference based on the new book that recently released. Well, it's available for pre-order at least right now at the website unbelievablebook.co.uk. We were, of course, able to sell a number of copies at the conference last week, and it was great to be able to meet so many people, talk to them about the programme, how they listen, how long they've been listening, how it's impacted their lives in some way or another. It is extraordinary when you actually get to meet the people who are listening week in, week out, either via their radio set or via their podcast or whatever. And what a joy to be able to do that quite systematically, really, by sitting at a desk, signing books and talking to people as they pass by. So thank you very much for all those who were able to come, who were able to pick up a copy of the book at the conference. Again, if you want to pick up a copy of the book wherever you are in the world, details available from the website unbelievablebook.co.uk. There's also a free sample chapter if you want to just whet your appetite and see what's in store. Chapter one of the book available if you just give us your email address at the website as well. Now, before I get into some feedback, starting with some feedback to the conference itself last week, just a quick mention of some exciting things. Firstly, good news. If you were listening to last week's programme, you'll remember that Corey Markham and Drew Sokol joined me to encourage people to help them develop a new podcast looking at Jesus, Hinge it's called. They were encouraging people to donate to their Kickstarter campaign to fund this very professionally produced podcast that they have plans for. At the time I interviewed them, they were at about the halfway mark with only several days to go. And the good news is they achieved their $20,000 target. So well done. And thanks to anyone who was moved to actually donate to the campaign because of the interview that we had on last week's programme. And well done, Drew and Corey. Really looking forward to hearing the finished results in due course. Also, I'm excited about some forthcoming programmes here on Unbelievable. Now, next week, we'll be hearing some more of the audio from last week's Unbelievable conference. We had some brilliant speakers, John Lennox, Andy Bannister, Beth Grove, Jeremiah J. Johnston, the Museum of the Bible were there, and many others besides. We'll be playing out some snippets, some highlights from the various seminars that took place. And I'll be letting you know how to order the conference on DVD and MP3 CD, as well as digital download next week on the programme. But I'm also going to be recording a discussion soon between Frank Turek, who's a well-known Christian apologist out in the USA. He's been on the programme before. He's visiting the UK soon, and I'm going to put him in discussion with Stephen Law, an atheist philosopher. That's something I know a number of Unbelievable listeners have been interested to hear, because Frank has a reputation in the USA for his dialogue and debate skills. And of course, Stephen Law has interacted with many of the issues that Frank Turek raises in books like I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, and the one he most recently came on to debate, which was Stealing from God. So you can look forward to that on Unbelievable. But Frank himself is in London doing a couple of events. One of them is called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist on the 1st of June. It's being hosted by Christian Heritage London at St Mary Woolnoth, King William Street in London. It's £10 per person, and it's happening 7:30 through to 9 o'clock on Thursday, the 1st of June. If you want to book in for that, to find out more information, frankturek.london.eventbrite.co.uk. Again, that's Frank Turek speaking for Christian Heritage London at St Mary Woolnoth, King William Street in London on Thursday, the 1st of June, £10 per person, and that's between 7:30 and 9 o'clock. You can book your ticket to see him at franktureklondon.eventbrite.co.uk. I'm also told that Frank will be at Kensington Temple on the Friday night, Friday the 2nd of June as well. Details yet to be released about that, I think. But look forward, if you can't make either of those, look forward to hearing Frank on Unbelievable in the near future in discussion with Stephen Law. Lots of other exciting shows that we're setting about making as well over the next few weeks as well. Let's talk about last week's conference, which was just a wonderful day. I mean, it's always a wonderful day, but this year there was such a good atmosphere to it. So many people that I was able to interact with because of the book signing meant that I really got to meet a whole host of unbelievable listeners, and so many good conversations and good responses as well to the day. Let me just read out a few of those that came in via Twitter. Whitley said, feeling inspired and engaged at Unbelievable 2017. Christine said, very good Q&A with Justin Brierley on his experience of 10 years presenting Unbelievable. A lot of people were using the hashtag to talk about the conference during the course of the day on Twitter and on Facebook. Here's was some of the other feedback that came in afterwards. Someone said, it was my first time, not what I expected. It was very professional, with a wealth of information, a great mixture of gifted and talented speakers doing great work. Each were an inspiration. A wonderful time was had. Another said, it was great to see our faith being defended so passionately. Another said, I found it challenging and biblically grounded. I thought the speakers were great and very inspiring, great resources. Another said, it met my spiritual needs. A wonderful range of engaging speakers who provided a depth of theological knowledge and teaching and a wide range of topics addressed. PJ got in touch on email to say, Justin, just a short note to say thanks for Unbelievable, the conference. My son and I really enjoyed it and found it stimulating. They seem to go from strength to strength. May God continue to work through you. And this one from Tom says, just a quick note to say how enjoyable the conference was again this year. Unfortunately, I had to leave at lunchtime due to a work commitment, which was thoroughly depressing as I was having such a wonderful time. The venue speakers and subjects under discussion were all perfect choices. And one thing I noticed was the atmosphere that comes with Christian fellowship. I'd arrived a bit stressed and cross, and despite having looked forward to it for months, at that moment I felt like I just wanted to be at home, and it was not in the most Christian of moods. Within minutes, though, of hearing the keynote address by John Lennox, I felt a completely different energy inside me. One far more positive, optimistic and good. Something I can only conclude was the Holy Spirit, which must really have smiled on such a gathering in God's name. I'm extremely British and middle class, so I don't say something like that easily. And it just goes to show how powerful the effect was upon me, which has compelled me to write in. God bless you. The conference is so important and beneficial. I'm just sad I had to wait a whole year for the next one. At least there's always the DVD. Indeed, thank you, Tom, for getting in touch. Thanks for all those who have expressed their thanks and feedback to last week's conference. And again, we'll be playing out some of the highlights from it on next week's programme and letting you know how you can order it on DVD, CD, or indeed on digital download next week on the programme. Look forward to airing some bits from last week's conference then. One thing that was an amusing moment in the conference was when I was signing books, a lady came up and said, oh, I've brought my non-Christian friend. He's an atheist, or at least he was an atheist. Apparently, during the course of just the first two seminars in the morning, myself and John Lennox that he'd attended, he decided he was no longer an atheist. He was now an agnostic. So all I can say is I pray that trajectory continues in the right direction. In any case, it was lovely to meet the non-Christians who attended as well. It's not just a conference attended by Christians, Unbelievable. It's certainly something that draws a lot of non-Christian listeners who listen to the programme. So a shout out to Phil and Ed and others who were there, who were regular listeners of the show, and their willingness to be there and engage with what was obviously primarily aimed at Christians, the material across the course of the conference. So back to Unbelievable, the book. Thanks to David Johnson, who is heading up a little team of sceptical Unbelievable listeners who are going to be responding to the book now that it's available. He says, just wanted to offer a personal congratulation on getting your book done. It's a huge accomplishment that'll follow you for the rest of your life. I hope you have even more books in you. Now, we've got a response book project, and I've ordered made sure that there are some books on the way to you, David, so you can publish this response. You have six writers who are going to be on the case for this. And, well, all I can say is I'm both honoured and terrified that a group of sceptical listeners of the show are going to be doing some kind of response publication online to my book. But that's all part of the fun and in a sense, fully what I expected, given that this is a show that inspires conversation, dialogue and debate. And I'll do my best to respond when you do put out that response, David. Thank you for coordinating it. This is going to sound a lot like I'm blowing my own trumpet, but I did just want to mention a few more of the endorsements that we've had for the book, because a number of people very kindly took the time to read the book in advance of publication and send me a short endorsement for it. They include Tim Keller, who said this is a highly readable survey of the reasons for Christian faith, often called apologetics, but it's not just an academic exercise. Justin has respectfully engaged many thoughtful atheists and skeptics over the years, which is always a test for a believer. The book is therefore very personal. It explains how his own faith has emerged while working through the challenges he's received. Believers and non-believers and the many in between will all be helped by this volume. It was also lovely to get an endorsement from Andrew Wilson, who's a church leader, author and theologian, has been a guest on Unbelievable in the past. He co-hosts the Mere Fidelity podcast. Andrew writes a wonderfully clear, winsome and accessible case for Christianity from a man who has hosted many of the world's most prominent skeptics and atheists. The mixture of storytelling and argument is engaging, and the result is compelling. Michael Licona has also written in the endorsements, Frank Turek. This one from Michael Roos, of course, an atheist who has made regular appearances on the programme. He's a professor of philosophy at Florida State University. He writes in only the style that Michael can. Above all else, this book shows the moral decency of Justin Brierley. He quotes me saying that, although a non-believer, my life has been guided by the parable of the talents. He could have quoted me saying that in the Republic, Plato says that the full life is one of sharing. Read this delightful book and see how Justin Brierley walks in the paths of both Athens and Jerusalem. Well, if you want to see why I was quoting Michael Roos and some of the programmes he's been on, you can read that in a couple of the chapters there. Artie Kendall writes, beautifully written, brilliantly argued, Justin's book Unbelievable will thrill Christians and challenge atheists. Everyone should read this book and buy extra copies to give away. Thanks to Randall Rouser, Sean McDowell. Holly Ordway says, gracious, thoughtful conversations about matters of belief and unbelief are very valuable, but sadly all too rare in today's culture of memes, sarcasm, and hostile attack and counterattack. Can we do better? Justin Brierley says yes, and has 10 years of fruitful conversations as the host of Unbelievable to prove it. Writing in an engaging, relaxed style, his book will be useful and encouraging for Christians trying to find ways to talk about their faith with skeptical friends and family, and it will be an interesting and thought-provoking read for skeptics as well. And there are further endorsements by Jeremiah J. Johnson, Gary Habermas, Faith Forster, Andy Bannister, Bruxy Cavey, Drew Dick, and others. So thanks for all of those lovely endorsements that came in. I was thrilled by the way the book has been received by those who received an advance copy of it. And I hope you equally, if you're listening and are able to pick up a copy at the website, will find it equally stimulating, whether you're a believer or not, because I did try to write this book with both camps in mind. Obviously, you're free to disagree, and I look forward to hearing responses from both sides in future weeks. Again, unbelievablebook.co.uk.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Don't forget, you can email in your thoughts about today's show, or indeed about anything you want to tell me about. Unbelievable@premier.org.uk is the place to send your emails. You can follow on social media at UnbelievableJB for the Twitter account, facebook.com/UnbelievableJB to follow the show on Facebook. Leave me your thoughts there, and of course to see what I post on a regular basis there as well. Here's a few of the thoughts that came in regarding last week's show on Twitter. So we did, a bit unusually for this programme, pornography was our show topic last week. Matt Frad, author of The Porn Myth, was on talking about what he believes is the harm that pornography does, not just from a religious perspective, but sociologically, psychologically, neurologically. And he was in conversation for that with two people defending the use of pornography. They were Charlotte Rose, who's a sexual freedom campaigner, and the other one was Adam Scarborough from the Campaign Against Censorship. In fact, I noticed that particular programme did very well in the downloads in the last week or so, riding high in the iTunes Religion and Spirituality podcast charts. I made mention of that thinking, well, you know, it sells, doesn't it? Pornography sells, even when it comes to debating it on Unbelievable. People are always interested to listen about this kind of a subject. Matt Frad tweeted me when I put that out saying, great stuff, thanks for having me on. The Twitter abuse has been non-stop, so that's a good sign, right? Well, a number of people who disagreed with Matt were on Twitter, actually, about his view that scientific studies confirm that porn is highly addictive and not necessarily good for people. Colin Chapman got in touch to say, after listening to you on Unbelievable, Matt, with Christian Radio, a two-second Google search refutes your claim, and he links there to a Huffington Post article saying porn addiction isn't really addiction. Well, both Matt and Gary Wilson, who's behind Your Brain on Porn, got back to say actually five peer-reviewed papers say that the lone study you cited actually supports the porn addiction model. And I think this is the one that Matt Frad mentioned at the end of that discussion last week, where he said there was only one study that appeared to suggest porn was harmless, and in fact a number of other peer-reviewed people had had then published that was a misinterpretation of the results of that study. Lots of people on Facebook as well talking about this. Mike McPherson says, argument was dominated by Matt Frad. The other two were clearly not very well prepared for the debate. How can Charlotte Rose say in one breath that we need education and in the next breath make the argument that scientific studies are not reliable? How can we educate if there's no such thing as reliable evidence and every opinion is equally valid? I'm sure she wouldn't be making that wine/cancer argument when it comes to global warming. That was Charlotte Rose saying she doesn't sort of trust the scientific studies necessarily. They always come up with different things anyway. Brian says, I think it was a missed opportunity to have two people who were censorship advocates talking to a person who wants to discuss data and studies on porn. Next time, consider reaching out to someone like Marty Klein, who's done extensive studies on this topic. So I think that's someone who takes a different view to Matt on whether whether porn is harmful from a scientific perspective. Mike said, this episode can be summed up as follows. Matt, porn is harmful, and here are the scientific studies that back it up. Adam and Charlotte, the scientific studies that Matt offered are refuted by other scientific studies out there. We don't know what they are, but we just know they must be there. And then Adam said, Charlotte's answers to Matt's studies. Some studies show that red wine causes cancers, others don't. Therefore, it's the same with porn studies. What? So there were some people who were sceptical, obviously. And as I said on the show, actually, it was somewhat short notice that Charlotte especially was able to be on the show. So they hadn't been given much chance to prepare and respond to the kind of evidence that Matt was bringing. Perhaps we'll do it again with someone who perhaps takes a bit of a stronger stance on the scientific evidence against Matt. Todd Sheets asks, as an atheist, there are numerous studies that indicate that religion is harmful to society. Why do you ignore those? I don't think we do, actually. I think we're fully prepared to engage with any studies of that kind on the show, and we have done in the past. But yeah, appreciate you getting in touch, Todd. Let's look at some of the emails that came in. This from Sebastian says, somewhat disingenuous of your pro-porn guest to suggest the industry is committed to age verification. I'm sure that by hook or by crook, most 12-year-old porn addicts will find ways to circumvent any controls imposed by government or the industry. Also, a great deal is user-generated or amateur, so that wouldn't be regulated. I'm also sceptical about the assertion that sex workers are happy. Maybe some are, but I suspect the majority are not. Thank you very much, Sebastian. Darren, who is an atheist who often writes me somewhat indignant emails, says, don't you feel that you should have at least vetted your guest claims enough to keep the crazies off your show? The one claiming that porn shrinks your brain has a demonstrable lack of understanding of what's actually been shown to be true about the world. Here's a breakdown of the study he cited and the problems with it, why the claim is pretty much meaningless. And you link me to a study or a website talking about the study. Again, I think these were studies picked up by Matt in the programme, which he believes have been shown not to be very reliable. And Darren goes on to say, not that you'll probably care, because you don't seem to be interested in an actually balanced discussion. If you really want to have a balanced and informing show, you should have actual sex educators. There are even people who have PhDs in sex that would have a lot of knowledge on the subject. All right. Well, maybe next time, Darren. Diana writes in, as a doctor, to support Matt, as a doctor, I attended a psychosexual update recently at a clinic at a well-known London hospital. The consultant was bemoaning how many men they're having referred and are finding it very hard or impossible to treat who cannot perform at all with real-life partners or spouses. This is because, as Matt said, teens' brains are being wired to be able to perform with plastic, odourless Barbie doll-like images, and when faced with a real female body, the brain then doesn't allow them to perform. The conclusion was that this consultant was begging their own teen sons not to look at porn at all and to spread word among their peers, and for us to do the same to avoid such long-term damage and sadness. Keep up the good work, Justin. Thank you, Diane. A really interesting personal experience there of what Matt was claiming was happening on the show. Sean in the US says, love the show, always listen once a week for the past year. The recent show about pornography, this show actually discredited some of the work I've done. I'm paraphrasing something Adam said, but he stated sex workers are good for those who are disabled. Now, I'm in the work of anti-human trafficking and have worked with Richmond Justice Initiative, which provides prevention education against human trafficking for soon-to-be middle schoolers. But most of the work has been for high schoolers. Adam's statement doesn't address the problem that many of these sex workers are actually trafficked or are forced into the industry. Love the show, but this needs to be addressed. When slavery today is worse than it was in the transatlantic slave trade era. We must stop it. We'd love to meet you one day. Appreciate all the hard work you do. Thank you very much, Sean, for getting in touch. Agree, there is a much wider issue there at stake. And Chris says, Justin, this was a blunt discussion, so it deserves a blunt response. I'm 57 years old. I've been married for 29 years, and I watch porn regularly. Why? The simple answer is that I enjoy watching people enjoy having sex, and doing so doesn't reduce my desire for my wife, or how I view her body, or what activities I might want to engage in with her. As long as the people I'm watching are comfortable with being watched, I don't see the immorality. Are there people who carry their viewing to extremes or frequency of subject matter? Of course there are, just as there are people who carry their drinking to extremes. But we don't consider all alcohol consumption to be immoral, at least not since the prohibition. Bottom line, porn is either fiction, actors paid to play out a story, or a documentary, real people engaging in sexual activity. And like books or TV shows or mainstream movies, most people are able to tell the difference. Okay, thank you very much for getting in touch. A variety of responses to that programme. If you want to listen again, it's at the website. As I say, it's been quite popular as a download in the past week. PremierChristianRadio.com/unbelievable is the place to go for all your unbelievable needs. You can download the podcast, join the thousands who download the show every week. Why not share it on? And why not share on the new website that I've been talking about for today's programme, unbelievablebook.co.uk. That's your portal for all things to do with the new book that's available now for pre-order. If you can get hold of a copy, then do so. Why not get hold of a copy for a friend as well? All the info and more available there. How to order it anywhere in the world too. unbelievablebook.co.uk. Okay, thank you for joining me on today's show. It's been lovely to have the pleasure of your acquaintance and a little more time than usual for some feedback this afternoon as well. I do hope you can come back for Unbelievable at the same time next week.
You're unbelievable.
Well, we're going to be hearing a number of highlights from the conference on next week's programme. People like John Lennox, Andy Bannister, Jeremiah J. Johnston, Beth Grove, Sarah Foster, and indeed the team who provided the youth stream as well. We're going to have lots of interesting stuff to whet your appetite for Unbelievable, the conference on DVD and CD. If you weren't able to attend this year's conference, you can still watch it and listen to it from anywhere in the world. For the moment, thank you for all your feedback. Thank you for listening today, and I look forward to hearing your responses as well. Coming up next, Mike Brown talks to Charmaine Noble McLean about his life as a guitarist to the stars. That's on the profile between 4 and 5 this afternoon. For the moment, thanks for being with me on today's show. See you next time.